started and call the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee meeting for April 11th, 2022 to order. Take a motion to approve the March 2nd, 2022 minutes.
So moved.
Second. Second, aye. Corcoran. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Staines? Okay. So let's move along to our resolutions. Our first resolution is resolution number 210, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to include additional funding for New York State Office of the Aging. This includes food and meals for senior citizens. Motion to discuss?
So moved.
Nolan, second. Corcoran, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? All right. Resolution 211, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $30,000, causing the aggregate plus contract plus amendment to be in excess of $50,000 entered into the County Family Home Health Office of the Aging. Motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Nolan, second. Corcoran. So just as a little background, I had noticed that we are getting, basically every month we get something from the Office of Aging related to their home health. And so I just asked if they could put together kind of a summary of what all of them are, when they come, how long, and what they cover, just so that we don't have to wonder every single month, what's this and is this a, you know, how does this relate to the one we got before? So Jay's putting together a table. Did you distribute it? Not yet.
It is in the OneDrive.
Okay, it's in the OneDrive. Just so that it sort of, you know, gets ahead of the question of how is this different from the one we just saw last month. So we have them all broken down on one table just to make it simpler. When you get a chance and look at it, if you see any more detail you feel you need to have, it just sort of seemed like, rather than repeating the conversation. That said, are there any questions or comments on Resolution 211? All right, all in favor of 211?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? All right. Next, we have 212, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $150,000 for Gateway Communities, again, Office of the Aging. This is expanding their temporary meal program. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Corcoran, any questions or concerns? Seeing none, all in favor of Resolution 212.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? All right. Resolution 139, setting a public hearing on proposed local law for the prescription take back. The sponsors, sorry, lost my words on this, asked for no action. And we do have a legal opinion in front of us that I just got today, so I haven't gotten to share with you all, but I'll get it to Jay for you all to see, showing that the state's law does not allow us to have our own. But I will get that to Jay to share with you. I just got it from Chris, so I didn't get a chance. Did I take a motion to discuss? I guess it's, I don't know what, do we take a motion to discuss if we're taking no action? No, okay, so Kathy, do you wanna,
Yeah, this isn't discussing, I guess, this particular resolution, but just the issue. I did speak to some pharmacists, and they say that they're generally very much in favor of these take-back programs, but somewhat agnostic about how they're regulated and who runs them and those kind of considerations. So I think maybe we should look into ways that we can support the pharmacies in efforts that they would like to take, especially if this is superseded or preempted by state law. We could perhaps still do something on the issue, but do it in a non-regulatory, non-legislative.
I think that's an excellent point. You know, just to clarify, the law, the state law prevents us from having our own, and the state law expects a whole plan from not actually the pharmacies, but from the prescription companies. However, that doesn't stop a pharmacy from doing this on their own. They are welcome to do it without going through the rigmarole of the state. So I think that an idea of how to help them without it regulatory, you know, I think that's a great idea. Jay, did you have something? I saw in chat your response, but I didn't see what the original thing was.
Just Director Copenhaver wanted to know if you wanted her to stay on the end for the housing alliance, the health alliance contracts, and the housing discussion.
I think it's totally up to you. You're welcome. If you have, because I know you have something else, you can just listen or get the minutes and see.
No, I didn't know whether
you're here, but you know.
No, I didn't know whether this was one of the meetings like you had a couple weeks ago where all of the people from like the community came in to talk about the housing, or was this just legislature?
This is legislature. We are going to touch base on that meeting briefly at the end, but not actually, just sort of a summary. And
Okay. I'll stick around. I'll turn my video off.
Okay. Chair Bartels?
Thanks. Yeah, I was just, you know, I think that there's been a lot of frustration, obviously, and that's where, you know, the spirit of this resolution, given that the state passed its legislation, and I think everyone fully expected it to be fully operational by now, and yet it's not at all. And part of that may be that it's reliant on the industry to come forward with the plan, and I believe also to fund the plan. So I definitely applaud the spirit of the resolution, but you know, I saw that cross my virtual desk too, the legal advice, and I didn't have time really to look at it, but I did get that the gist of it is that we, you know, we're precluded from taking action. So hopefully we'll circulate that document to everyone and have a follow-on conversation. So I'm happy that the sponsors are willing to hold off on this.
I'll also add that I mentioned this last time, but Senator Hinchey and an assembly person who I do not recall have a bill right now in committee to sort of override this and address the fact that it's been taking too long and actually put more of the responsibility on the pharmacies instead of industry. So there's also the idea of whatever we can do to support that on the state level to move it along. All right. So I'm going to move on to resolution number 159, establishing an Ulster County Land Bank Development Corp for New York State Land Bank. Motion to discuss.
I'll very happily make that motion.
Nolan, second. Corcoran. I'll let Chair Bartels, you can start us off.
Thank you. So I believe Clerk Mahler circulated proposed changes that I'd like to be considered. You know, I submitted it one member short and have since found that member. So that's included. You have background on all of the proposed board members. The other change, if I can just simply explain, is we were being very ambitious with the resolution in that initially we had intended to include the articles of incorporation and bylaws and et cetera. So I'm asking that we strike that. It should be said that we're not required to have those things in terms of the application, and it was always expected that the board itself would adopt their own bylaws and non-discrimination policy, et cetera. As part of the application process, we will be submitting a sample bylaws and the articles of incorporation. It's just they don't have to be in this resolution. The other thing I want to say, and I know I've said it before, but because I don't know if I've spoken to each of you on this committee, you know, it continually strikes me as backward that the first thing we have to do is appoint a board and seat them when we don't yet have the authority to have a land bank. But I assure you that is what's required of us for whatever reason. It's in the guidelines. So this is really step one. And I'm hoping, you know, with your all support, that then we'll dig in earnest to begin the application process, which I don't think will take that long. I'm really pleased that all the people listed here agreed to serve, even in that unusual circumstance of being appointed to a board that's doesn't yet have the authority to exist. And we also had other really amazing names brought forward, some of whom I spoke to about the possibility of eventually being seated on the advisory board to the land bank, which it will be expected that the land bank will seat an advisory board, and certain professionals are probably better suited for that board rather than this board. But I think we have an amazing group of citizen volunteers willing to take the first step and willing to attach their names to this.
Legislator Nolan.
I missed the email updating. Can you tell us the name of the ninth appointee?
Sure. The name of the ninth appointee is Zali Nguyen. And Mr. Nguyen has extensive experience with New York City's Habitat for Humanity as their treasurer and executive director for 10 years.
Great. Thank you. And appreciate these comments. It is a process that doesn't look very clear and orderly, but it's what it takes to get the job done.
Any other? Oh, go ahead.
If I could also say, to thank all of you, my colleagues, for your patience, because I know that this has been on the docket in the previous Economic Development Committee for extended months, and it really did take me a bit of time to wrap my head around how to get people to serve. But once I dug in on it, it happened pretty quickly. So again, thank you all for your patience and seeing it month after month and working with me up to getting to this point.
Anyone else? Well, I'll say I'm really excited about this group, and I think that the capacity of what we could do for housing, I'll be optimistic when this all gets approved, is pretty amazing. And so I hope it gets approved in the legislature, and then I hope all legislators do what they can to encourage them on the state level to approve it as well. We have two toll booths, so we might as well have two land banks, right? All right, all in favor of, and I just moved my thing, so I've lost it.
Can you make sure that you do it as amended? If someone can move the amendment.
Oh, sorry. So take a motion to approve as amended. Legislator Nolan, a second on the amendment. Corcoran, mm-hmm. All in favor of resolution 150-159 as amended?
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
I didn't know if we had to, because I thought it was amended previously, but.
Thank you.
Okay. 163, establishing and funding capital project 631, a geothermal system for Silver Garden senior housing development. Motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
Nolan, second. Corcoran, okay. Discussion, questions, comments, concerns?
This is a really appropriate project to provide housing for seniors, and especially low-income seniors, and to have it be done with geothermal is just a great thing. That has health benefits, I believe, for the residents, and it should serve as a model for other projects around the county.
Other comments? I'll just say, this is more of a process, and this, goes to you, Joanna, more than anything else. The fact that there are these established buckets that were not established by the legislature, but by the executive, I think that complicates these ARP projects in the messaging of what these projects are. Sometimes people do just refer to the title lists, and because it was felt that this should go under environment or green energy, when in reality what we're doing is we're supporting, this is a resolution for supporting senior housing, and it was sort of forced into the classification of geothermal, so it fits under an established bucket that was not established by us in the legislature. And I kind of feel I'm kind of more comfortable that things are what they really are. And, you know, I recognize the money could be used for various things, but the intent of this and the reason why it's in this committee is not because it's geothermal. It's in this committee because it's about senior housing. And so I just feel like the effort to fit this into that process of calling it a geothermal resolution when in fact it's a housing resolution is problematic. And I would prefer myself that we just forget those established buckets and we just put these through as they are for our sake and for the constituents' sake.
Got it. Yeah, I don't think I was privy to that discussion, but I'll definitely I'll take that back.
Thank you. Any other comments? So this did go through the ARP committee. There are in our attachment the ARP scoring for it. I assume you all saw that. I just wanted to make sure that's clear because we have a policy where we don't vote on anything if ARP committee hasn't looked at it. Okay, anything else? All in favor of resolution 163?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Resolution 164 is grouped with 163. It's approving a contract for $600,000 with RUFCO. First, a motion to discuss.
So moved.
Nolan, second. Corcoran? Okay. Any discussion? So just again to clarify that this is associated with the Silver Gardens project. This is a partnership with RUFCO. It's not, this. My questions originally were because of the wording of it, is RUFCO building geothermal now? And that's the other part of the confusion of the title, because this partnership with RUFCO is not for them to, it's for them to partner with an housing for the aging and not, they're not specifically, yeah. Chair Bartels.
Thank you. Yeah, and I just want to clarify, I mean, first of all, I mean, I do hope that the county's commitment to the project will be what's able to put the project over the edge in order to get its funding to bring it to fruition, because I think it really is a strong project. But if for some reason the funding doesn't happen and the project doesn't happen, then the commitment's contingent on the project moving forward. I want to clarify that first. And then also, you know, there was some discussion and I saw a draft of, something like recapture language similar to what's being discussed at, Golden Hill. In Golden Hill, at one point, we were discussing an equity stake and the idea of a seller's note. And again, we're talking about only if these projects were to transition from being what they are currently to no longer being that, to becoming market rate or to being sold for some other purpose. And again, I think that there's probably protections. My understanding, I've learned a lot through this project. Thanks to Mr. O'Connor from RUFCO and the sharing of documents that really helped me to understand how these funding mechanisms work a little bit better, albeit they're very complicated. But I think that there are probably already protections in place in that if either of these projects were to no longer be affordable housing projects, they'd have to pay back much more than our contribution. So I understand that, but I'm just in an effort to protect the county. I just want to make sure that those recapture clauses are going to be in the agreement. I see Dennis, our county planner, nodding, and that the commitment's not going to happen unless the project happens, obviously.
Related to that, I mean, what kind of timeline are we talking about? Do you know Dennis or Kevin?
Well, Kevin's here. I'd let him answer that question.
Yeah, you had to get off mute without having a car accident.
Yeah, I'm off mute. I'm parked. And can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. So thanks for your comments. You know, I think we can confirm that the timeline is the applications are currently being reviewed. If the county legislature votes this money forward, that can be communicated by the county legislature to the state agency during the period of review. Decisions will be, I think, by early summer. And we could, if we're lucky to be awarded these very competitive grants, then we could, you know, start construction, say, by January 1 on this project. So the only other point I want to make is, you know, the geothermal aspect that we were able to, we've done now on several other projects here at this one, similar to what we did at Energy Square, and the importance to the senior housing components. We're going to be able to allow the seniors to pay, again, 29 of the units being, you know, special needs for formerly homeless seniors with services. But for all seniors, for all 57 apartments, they're going to be just paying rent, and we're going to be providing all of the utilities. So, you know, in the affordable housing, which has been so difficult for people, utility costs are part of the exacerbation, you know, of the situation. So to be able to provide, you know, with the rental payment, heat, cooling, lighting, cooking, it's a really great thing. And the geothermal helps us to be able to do that. And it adds, you know, just a whole nother layer of not just affordability, but also stability to the senior housing project. So if we're not funded, the money will be uncommitted unless we hopefully go back again, you know, and reapply. If we are funded, the timeline was we'd start in January, no later, I would say, in terms of construction. And yes, if you know, we'll sign a 50-year regulatory agreement with the state of New York. We'll have a lot more money. We're hoping to leverage about $19 million in total for this project. But if we were ever to not become affordable within the next 50 years, we're happy to see the money go back to the county as well.
Thank you. I will say, I mean, on the geothermal, I'm thrilled that there is the geothermal. My only comment was that that wasn't the headline. I would say also that we do have to be thoughtful of our timeline with spending ARP money. And that I do have a little bit of a worry on some things, you know, like I think we have to be very, I don't know whether it's a contingency plan, if there is any delay in this timeline you're talking about, or how that, you know, how that process really works in terms of identifying that we have it and actually being able to spend the money within the time period that we're supposed to. But I think we just have to keep our eyes on that. All right, so I gotta stop scrolling prematurely. All in favor of resolution 164?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. The resolution 166, with the, I'll read the original, and then there's an amendment that changes the title. So the original is establishing and funding capital project 632 Crisis Stabilization Center, purchase of 368 Broadway, for ARP, this is ARPA money. So first, motion to discuss. Corcoran, second. Bartels, all right. And so first we have some amendments. We're crossing off in the title, establishing this, that we already established the crisis stabilization capital project last year. And so this is the funding of it. And there's also another amendment of it not being a land acquisition, but a building acquisition. So does somebody want to make a, present that amendment for us to first vote on that? Chair Bartels, a second on the amendment. Erner, all in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so on the actual resolution, any questions, comments? So my one issue that I spoke to Deputy Executive Contreras about was just this concern that we approved the Crisis Stabilization Center, and I did not want the Crisis Stabilization Center to be intricately tied into this resolution, in that should this resolution not pass, it should not get in the way of us having a Crisis Stabilization Center. This resolution is the mental health hub, which would be inclusive of a Crisis Stabilization Center, but things can happen. I mean, it might not pass, or it could actually pass, and whoever wins the RFP for the Crisis Stabilization Center may look at the space and say, this isn't feasible. And I'm not expecting any of those things to happen. I just wanted to make sure that it's very clear that stabilization center does not get crushed in any way if there are any problems or challenges with this process. I'm fine personally with this mental health hub. I'd be fine if it doesn't work, but I'm fine if it does. I'm not okay with the Crisis Stabilization Center not going through. We put a lot of work into that, and it's a very important, needed thing in the county. And so I had the assurance from the executive's office that they are not completely tied together. If something should go wrong with this resolution or this building or something that the work was continuing with the Crisis Stabilization Center, the RFP is out. They already have people who have applied. And so I just wanted to make sure that part is clear. I don't know, Deputy Executive Contreras, do you have anything you want to add that I missed?
No, I just wanted to emphasize, like you said, Crisis Stabilization Center is one of our biggest priorities, and we're moving as fast as we can on it. So on the same page with you there.
Thank you. Chair Bartels?
Thank you. And I would just also, again, like to ask that the opportunity be given to other legislators who weren't given a tour of the building to be able to see the building, because I think in walking through it and imagining the possibility, it's pretty exciting.
Sure, definitely, yes. If there's any legislators who haven't had the chance, please reach out to me and we'll connect you and make sure that you're able to see it.
Thank you.
And on that point, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, maybe we'll try, maybe in order to help it so that you're not getting 20 separate calls, maybe we can try to do it through the legislative office to coordinate who might be interested, so that then you can pick a date that works for everyone's, or as much as that's possible.
Thank you. I do want to preempt what could potentially be a raised red flag and turn that flag into not a red flag. Despite the fact the building is not only adjacent to, but attached to Westchester Medical Center Health Alliance, the building is not owned by or theirs in any way. This is not an agreement with them. They do rent maybe one office in that building, maybe two. But I just want to be clear that despite its actual physical connection, to the hospital itself, if this is not a partnership or a purchase from Westchester Medical Center in any way, because I know there are people who would be concerned about that. Okay, any other questions? All right, all in favor of resolution number 166 as amended?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? Okay. Resolution 173, confirming the appointment of Tara McDonald as Commissioner of Mental Health, motion to discuss. Corcoran, second, Uchitel. Any discussion? I'll just say I'm very, very, I've worked with Tara quite a bit. I'm very impressed with her. I have no doubt that she can really move the dial for our county in the area of mental health. I wouldn't have picked anyone else personally to do the job. I think she's, I just want to say that from my perspective, I think it's a fantastic decision. Legislator Uchitel, then Nolan.
Yeah, I'll just build on that by saying, my experience with Ms. McDonald coming to the Health Committee in the past is one of the reasons why I'm so excited about her stepping into this role, particularly because this topic is such a dynamic one where so many different moving pieces are coming together, and having that open communication is something that I'm really, really looking forward to as a, you know, title level department here that's, you know, that's you know, really focusing on this, and having a commissioner that's as responsive is something that I think is going to be a huge asset.
Legislator Nolan?
Yes, I agree completely. It's really fitting, and I commend Tara McDonald for many, many years of service already, and glad to have the title and position go with it, and really looking forward to your helping us do really great things.
Okay. Tara, do you want to say something?
No, just thank you.
Okay. All right. All in favor of Resolution 173?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Resolution 174, confirming appointment of a member to the Community Service Board Substance Abuse Subcommittee. Motion to discuss? Corcoran, second Nolan. Any kind of any discussion? The resume is provided there for Dr. Michael Torres. So the only question I had, and I did give it to you, Deputy Executive Contreras, but I don't feel like I have the full answer. I recognize the difference between the Community Service Board and Ulster Prevention Council. I guess I'm just wondering, because Ulster Prevention Council is working on substance abuse prevention, and then the Community Service Board is a substance abuse subcommittee. I was just curious, are they operating separately in these vacuums, or are they operating interchangeably or together in any way? And I don't know, Tara, you're shaking your head, maybe you can answer just sort of how are those two, if at all, working together?
So at one point, the Prevention Council was participating in our CSB meetings and in our subcommittee meetings, and generally that would be how it would work best. Per Part 41, we have to have a substance abuse subcommittee. So we're following those regulations, but certainly it just sets a frame for which for us to work locally. So the Prevention Council is certainly invited. This is where they're able to share information directly with our subcommittee members about what are some of the challenges and barriers to providing these services, as well as some of the successes that they've had. So they're very much a part of the table. It's an added burden for the staff of the Prevention Council to be able to participate. The meetings are after hours at 5 o'clock, but they're certainly always welcome.
Right. And I know you serve on that, so you can communicate. I just, you know, I find that we have oftentimes many different organizations and committees going on in this county that are so dramatically overlapping in their mission, and sometimes operate with some of the same people, but, you know, not really working together necessarily. So I'm glad to know that that's true. Any other questions or comments on this? Okay, all in favor of Resolution 174?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? All right, unanimous. Resolution 200, which is setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 7, a local law amending the code of the County of Ulster in relation to evictions, to be held on Tuesday, May 17th. A motion to discuss. Uchitel, second. Erner, Uchitel.
I'd like to, you know, open the floor to anyone else who would like to discuss. I've said a lot about this and will in a moment, but I didn't want to steal the microphone. I figured I'd let others go first.
Okay. Legislator Erner.
Thank you. So I'm not fully here for reasons that you all know. I haven't looked at the agenda before just this meeting, but I decided I needed to be here. And it's because of this resolution that I already knew about, and I hope that we'll support moving this forward. Our county needs to enact more protections to prevent displacements, and this is a start to that, to give some tenants a little bit more to work with. I guess that's all I'm going to say right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, legislator. And thank you for taking time from Shiva to come here and talk to us. Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I appreciate Legislator Ermer being here tonight, and send my wishes to your family. And I appreciate the work both you and Legislator Uchitel and others on this. I guess I was a little surprised to find that this law would require landlords to go to court in any case that they were considering an eviction. So I was a little worried about that and wondered if I am misreading this or if there's a context or rationale that I haven't seen yet.
Legislator Uchitel?
Yeah, this doesn't increase or it doesn't move up the need to go to court. This is, you know, a landlord could ask a tenant to leave and they could decide to leave, that they don't want to be there, they don't feel welcome. A lot of tenants are intimidated by the requests that landlords make to leave, you know, without forcing an eviction. And it's only if an eviction is forced would you know, this come into play. This affects the criteria of what happens in the eviction. You know, this I hope will give tenants more confidence that they can stay in their homes. Right now, a lot of tenants just leave at the first suggestion that the landlord doesn't want them there, which I think is very unfortunate. It's a very, very imbalanced power dynamic. But this doesn't, you know, remove the landlord's ability to say, hey, I, you know, would prefer if you left, and the tenant can say no, which they can say today. And that would be an eviction today. It doesn't change that.
That's helpful. Thank you. And the other concern that's been brought to me by members of my district who are landlords of more than four units is that they have invested in their properties, they say, as their retirement planning, and that they feel that they often are in the situation where they will have a tenant and the eviction process they feel is already quite arduous. And so the request that they brought to me, and I'm not sure how to accommodate it, and I apologize for not having brought it to the folks working on this sooner, is whether this legislation will affect all properties or new ownership of properties. So the complaint is, and I'm troubled by it, that it's changing the rules of the game as, you know, as we are in it. And so that their expectations of the way they would be able to manage their properties going forward would be changed dramatically by this. In one case, the landlord said that, you know, spoke about understanding the reason to want to have this, but raising the concern that it just changes the way that they're able to cope with economic changes and the pandemic and so forth. So are we addressing that in any way for people who may have fit within the law but not be owners of 25 or 50 or 100 units?
So if I may, Chair Walter, so two things I want to say to that. And first I'll address it on a very general level, which is to say, part of the process that I hope that we can go through in this legislative process of setting a public hearing, hearing from landlords, hearing from tenants, hearing from homeowners that fit in either category, that we can hear these concerns. And one of the fundamental things I think that we need to determine is, you know, just what is a small landlord that is a member of our community that we want to make sure that we're not unduly burdening, right? And that might, you know, the folks that you're talking to might, through the process of legislating, we might determine that we are going to exclude you know, a larger group of landlords than this current version excludes, which is just the owner occupied, you know, four unit, or if some, you know, if they're going to use it for an immediate family member. So that's the broad response, and why I'm so eager to bring us to a public hearing, which I've been trying to do for almost, for about 6 months now. For the landlords who view this as an investment and the rules have been changed, you know, sometimes the rules have to change because a population is being disproportionately harmed by the playing field. And that's the playing field that we have. That's my assessment. I realized that there are varying degrees of recognition of that. And that's what I hope that this process will uncover. But, you know, rules change when it becomes clear that a type of investment is harming people. Right now, people are being forced out of their homes because landlords realize that they can sell, because they can cash out on an investment that's worth twice as much as it was. You know, a huge amount of growth in landlords being able to cash out. Most of the people in my district that are being that are reaching out to me because they're being evicted are actually being evicted by people that just purchased homes, right? So obviously people are taking advantage of the circumstance. You can sell a property with the old rent and the landlords know I can buy it and I can immediately raise the rent. I'm going to get rid of all of the tenants. And that's what's happening, I believe, all over our community. It's certainly happening all over my district. And so, you know, to that specific issue, I say the rules need to change. I mean, ask anyone who invested heavily in fossil fuels and then different types of funds, you know, have divested from fossil fuels. I believe we're still over-indexed in it in general, but if it is less attractive to live in this community is too expensive, and that has to do with the cost of housing. If the cost of housing goes down, yes, value of housing that a landlord might have, you know, had triple, quadruple, you know, the investment over the years, it might look more like a traditional investment where you get 5% growth every year and you feel good about that. Or maybe it's, you know, more than that because it's compounding, right? Sometimes the rules need to change, and we've got to tip the scales in favor of those that are being seriously harmed by the current environment. And that's what I'm seeing in my community. And I don't think that's who we are. I really don't think that's who we are. I don't think that's who the landlords are that you're speaking to. You know, it's not who we are, but it is what's happening. And I really think we need to do something about it.
All right, anyone else? So I'll just say we unfortunately had gotten an ethics board decision that had stated that those legislators who are somehow served by the nature of this or not served were not allowed to vote or discuss. They needed to abstain. I will say that I reached out to the legislative council to get clarification on the differential between speaking about and voting on an actual law versus voting on a public hearing, where I believe the intent of the ethics board was that their concerns were not necessarily applicable for the vote on a public hearing. They're just applicable in the vote on the law. Unfortunately, I haven't gotten the council's statement about this yet. So I'm hoping it'll come soon, but my personal decision is it's uncomfortable for me, knowing that I own a rental property, to go against the ethics board's ruling. So I will just say that I will need to abstain at this point should we make that vote. Chair Bartels, you want to go first and then...
Well, yeah, I'm just going to state that I've been advised by legislative council, both legislative councils, to recuse, and that is based on the ethics board ruling. So that's all I'm permitted to say, is that I'm required to recuse.
Legislator Ushetel.
So I'm just gonna, you know, say this. I will accept no action tonight, and you know, when I'm done speaking, we can just move on to resolution 209, which is the next thing on the agenda. But I do want to say, you know, I'm very frustrated by this. You know, the ethics ruling was received by us, you know, months ago, and I am not someone that can, you know, because I don't fall into the category of a landlord, I can't challenge it. I would encourage anyone with the courage to do so to challenge it. I don't know if we're not getting the counsel that would, you know, give us confidence in challenging it. I'm getting counsel that gives me confidence that the ethics opinion is not a quality opinion. But yet, you know, here we are, and we're not acting on it. And I'll also point out that this is one of two council provided opinions that is, you know, the reason that something isn't moving forward tonight. I'm very concerned about that, and I'm saying it here in this meeting because I think that's where it needs to be said. This has been on our plates for months, and we have not made progress on this. I don't want to put anyone on the spot about who is or isn't, you know, really finding the courage to deal with this, but our community is disappearing, and it pains me immensely. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm very disappointed.
Legislator Nolan?
I'm a little confused by Legislator Ushetel's comments. Do we really have a majority of the committee that is conflicted here or potentially conflicted in line with the Ethics Committee ruling? I mean, the Ethics Committee's opinion, I think, is worthy of respect until it's challenged. And so far I've heard that affects Legislator Walter and Chair Bartels. If it doesn't affect anybody else, it affects Legislator Corcoran as well. So, and Legislator Earn. Okay. So you counted the votes correctly, or the, not the votes, the
abstentions. Votes.
Yeah, the abstentions. All right. You have your hand up for other reasons too, Legislator.
Legislator Earner.
Do I still direct my comments through you, Chair Walter, or is Deputy Chair Lopez gonna take it from here? Just point of order.
Oh, yeah, good point. Go ahead, Joe. Direct it to Deputy Chair Lopez, please. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We seem to have at least potentially a lame duck ethics law at this point. And what I mean by that is we're proposing to change it. And what the discussion around that did bring up this topic, which is not the reason or the only reason that we had already begun that work. But just to point that out, assuming that the new law goes into effect, I think that would eliminate these concerns and basically negate the ruling that had taken place last fall. So I wonder whether we could all go out on a limb knowing that that is the likely outcome and that an ethics board ruling on the same sort of thing in 9 months would not likely end up the same place. We could go out on a limb right now for our community, for our constituents, and go ahead anyway, because ultimately, if our work here does represent the will of the people and we're changing the rules of what's ethical, I think the ethical thing is to weigh in on this right now.
Deputy Chair Lopez,
are you unable to speak on this at all because you have to abstain, Chair? Chair Wall.
I mean, I think it's up to you all.
Okay.
Do we know if the legislator Petit would have to abstain under the Ethics Committee's opinion?
If I may, Deputy Chair Lopez, I believe that she would. And I, you know, while I would love to move forward with this, we could we're going to end up with some variation of this in laws and rules, and then again in session. And I think that this vote would be tainted by abstentions, and I don't want to do that. We got to figure out a way forward on this. So as much as it pains me, I don't see. I don't know. I just don't see it.
I was actually speaking. I had my headphones plugged in, so I don't think anybody could hear me at the time. Chair Walter, you can't speak on this at all because you're going to abstain. Okay. Understood.
Recuse.
To recuse.
To be more specific.
Understood. And to your question, Legislator Erner, I don't feel comfortable assuming that there's going to be a change in the ethics ruling. So, and with that said, I know that our council also had some issues with this. So I'm not sure how I would vote on the law, but, I'm rarely against a public hearing because I think it's important to allow the public to weigh in. But my vote and legislator Uchitel's vote, I guess legislator Nolan's vote in the affirmative, I don't think we'll pass this anyway if everybody has to abstain. So if that's the case, then, perhaps we can take no action. We'll get some answers and we can bring it up next month.
Yeah, I agree with that, Deputy Chair Lopez. And I would just also ask if whoever would be appropriate, it might be you, Craig, to go to the legislature's council and see whether we could bring forward as a committee of the whole a resolution to have a public hearing on this law. If we don't have enough legislators to vote in that body, then I think we should take that information back to the Ethics Committee and ask them to take another look at this. In regard to planning boards and zoning boards of appeals, I know there's clear case law that allows people who are farmers to vote on things that address farming in their communities, precisely because if you don't allow them to, in communities that have a lot of farmers, you can't run these boards. So I think we should keep a very careful note of the vote here or the number of abstentions here this evening that prevented a vote and take that information back to the Ethics Committee.
I think that's fair. And I will leave it up to you, Legislator Uchitel. Do you want a vote to postpone or do you want to just take no action?
I really think I don't think we have an option besides to take no action because I'm not even sure. I guess that a postponement vote would be fine, but moving on, I think would be probably the right move.
Okay. Well, with that said,
Legislator Erner has his physical hand. Oh,
gotcha. Okay. Go ahead, Legislator.
Thank you, Chair Lopez. Thank you, Legislator Nolan. I'm willing to take my chances and discuss this and vote on it or whatever's happening and continue to participate despite everything that's been said. I'm just going to say that. So if the committee then would like to count me as a fourth person who's participating right now, I will participate.
As a point of order, if we had, for Uchitel, Nolan, Erner, and Lopez to be voting members, is that enough for the outcome of the vote to count?
Yeah.
All right. So seven. Chair Bartels would need to leave, I think. No. You don't count towards a quorum. The chair doesn't.
She does, but she doesn't affect the number because Legislator Petit is not present. Mm. So your quorum number for this evening remains seven.
Let's see. I don't remember if I was a motion or a second on this, but I wouldn't feel comfortable moving this in the setting of having a legislator acting in opposition to the Ethics Committee's opinion. So if I were the motion or the second, I would withdraw from that and ask somebody else to do that. And I'm not sure I would feel comfortable voting to move forward in that circumstance. I think it just puts the law in a very tenuous position and creates something that we'll be talking about other than the law when we're just talking about scheduling a public hearing. So I would prefer to find another way to schedule the public hearing than to have a legislator move forward against, an articulated Ethics Committee opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. I can appreciate Legislator Ushto's urgency in order to move this forward, and it is time sensitive, considering what people are going through in this county. So, but still, I would rather have this right and hold it over than move forward. This evening, well, I wouldn't feel comfortable anyway. So, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I mean, that's all fine. I'm just going to say I'm considered a renter, according to our council, which is bizarre. I live in a house with my partner that she owns the house, and so apparently the law says that I pay her rent, so I'm a renter. And renters aren't just like landlords are excluded by the ethics opinion, which to me also seems bizarre. And if we haven't had any public conversations about this, maybe it's time we did that, because we've had plenty of private conversations as legislators amongst ourselves and in our communities, I know, about this particular ruling and its implications. But anyway, I just had to say that. Thank you.
Okay. So, Legislator Ushto, do you still want to take the action on this?
I think Legislator Nolan is right, as much as it pains me. Even though I think we might have the numbers tonight to prevail, I don't want the story on this to be tainted. And my recommendation would be that Legislator Walter assumes her role as chair and moves us to Resolution 209.
Okay. Resolution 209, setting a public hearing on the sale and or transfer of 5 parcels of land owned by Ulster County in the town of Esopus, Kingston, Lloyd, Plattekill, and Ulster to a local development corporation. Motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
Second. Chair Bartels. Any discussion? Chair Bartels?
So these properties, I know Planner Doyle will be able to tell us the exact time, but these properties were pulled from the tax foreclosure sale some time ago, more a year ago, maybe. Is it a year? Yes. Okay. A year ago. They were then subsequently discussed in economic development again because of where housing sat in the last term. The intention, and I had a long talk today with Planner Doyle about this specifically, but also about the bigger picture of the many strategies that we can take to address affordable housing in Ulster County, and this is potentially one of them. I would like a month to talk about it. I just joined the housing authority that we're talking about transferring this to, and it was not on the agenda at the first meeting that I attended, which was last month. We did not discuss this, and we were set to have another meeting, which just it's getting postponed, but still that meeting would have been tomorrow, which is after the resolution deadline on this. So I'm not opposed to it as an idea. I really do want to have an understanding of the plan of the proposal. In the ARP committee, the question came up of, what's the debt? There were a lot of detailed questions about what's the percentage AMI that we're going to require that these houses be. And I feel like we are getting too into the weeds potentially with those kinds of questions. But I do think that I'd like to have an understanding of just what the process is going to be with the previous deputy county executive, deputy county executive Wright. She stated in the last term at the Economic Development Committee, she stated that there would be the possibility of going out to an RFP for the rehabilitation and subsequent transfer of these properties as deeded affordable homes prior to the transfer to the authority. That unfortunately didn't happen in this interim. So what we're asking to do is to set a public hearing in order to transfer the homes, and then would undertake the RFP to see if there is outside money to do this, because the authority at this moment in time doesn't have the money to do it on its own. So again, you know, I'm thinking that there's the possibility that this would be back before us as soon as a month. I do also want to state that there's been discussion, you know, as we're talking about respite homes, that also came up. None of these may be the right or correct or perfect places for respite homes, but again, I think we need to have a sit down in order to work out some of the, you know, the big picture issues related to this. All that said, I want to say that I'm very supportive, obviously, with the idea of moving a land bank forward. I'm very supportive of removing properties from a tax sale that is set up to get the maximum amount of money, but not the highest and best use for the properties. So I am totally supportive of pulling additional properties from the sale. I applaud that effort. And I think that we need to come up with a strategy to that regard, whether or not we get a land bank. Again, I'm with Legislator Walter. I'm optimistic. I'm going to say when we get a land bank, but just the sidebar is if we don't, this is one of the tools in which we can handle that. And I acknowledge that. I'm personally not ready to move on it this month, not having even spoken about it at the authorities meeting.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
I think that the county has for decades taken properties off the tax rolls without great plans of what was going to happen next, but with just some idea. And I don't see any reason to hold back. I would go ahead and have the public hearing next month, and we'll continue working on how to use these properties. They are, you know, in arrears. We have potential uses. I don't see that we have to have a perfectly put together plan for them before we make sure that we have them. And especially in light of what we just had to do with the prior resolution, I feel like we can move forward with this and set ourselves up to address the same housing issues that we've been saying are so urgent. So I appreciate the concerns, and, you know, I think there are some ways to move forward that can be fleshed out. They can be fleshed out much better if we own the properties than if they are owned by somebody else who's in arrears on taxes to the point that we're ready to take the properties. So my preference would be to move forward. I'm always reluctant to do that in the face of advice of people that have studied the issue more than myself, but I do feel some urgency here, and this one doesn't seem problematic to me.
I'll let Legislator Ushetel first, then Chair Barton.
Yeah, I agree with Legislator Nolan, but only because it's a public hearing. I do think that it's very important for, which I think is what the Legislator Nolan was saying. I think it's very important, and I think we saw it with the EDC, with our members that sit on the EDC, that when you have members of our body that come and say, yes, we talked about this in the basically that's an LDC as well. We talked about this and, you know, we support it. I think that that's important. And obviously, while I wish we could do that here, if it hasn't been discussed there yet, you know, we can't. However, for a public hearing, I think it will certainly get discussed. I would be happy to vote in favor of this tonight.
Chair Bartels?
I just wanted to clarify, Legislator Nolan's saying in terms of ownership, right now the county does have ownership to the extent that the foreclosures happened. It's just that we're talking about transferring it to another, as Legislator Uchitel said, an LDC.
Thank you. Yeah, that's the correction. But Legislator Uchitel is correctly identified.
I'm going to just ask you, raise your hand when you want to speak. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Nolan. Through the chair. Yes, and Legislator Uchitel has really hit what I should have emphasized more, which is this is a public hearing, so it doesn't obligate us to any action. We can have the public hearing and then to have our process.
Thanks. Others? So I'll just say, and try to keep this brief because we have a lot more to go through. I did have concerns and put in a request to Deputy Executive Contreras asking what are the parameters for the LDC to move forward. And, you know, I appreciate the response, but I think it speaks to what Chair Bartels is saying is that they're not fully established yet. How we assure that these parameters are the ones that we want to make sure that these houses are used for exactly what we feel need to happen for affordable housing. My concern with making it a public hearing is we have this conversation several times that in a public hearing, I would hope that the public could also speak to these parameters, to speak to the language that says these houses will be used in this way and not for this way. That's part of it. I don't think they would have as much to say about just the concept of the sale. They'd have more to want to say, if anything, on what these houses should be used for. And so I am concerned that if we don't have the full clarification or proposed clarification of exactly what these parameters are, it becomes challenging for the public to comment fully appropriately on this. Legislator Nolan.
I think that's an excellent point. Is there a way for us to schedule the public hearing with an understanding that we will have one or more proposals that would be discussed and to build in the notion that if we do not have a proposal that we could cancel the public hearing?
I'll ask the chair also, when is the LDC board going to be discussing this and as part of that answer? Go ahead, Chair Bartels.
So, The tomorrow's meeting, like I said, got canceled, but I would expect that, it's a small board. I would expect that we could schedule another meeting in a fairly short amount of time. I think though, you know, you've, Legislator Walter have hit sort of on my concern. It's not only, you know, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to see the RFP prior to making the transfer of the properties, because then we could articulate the, you know, why we wanted to transfer them and the success of that, but also the other, frankly, another concern I have about having a public hearing, while it sounds harmless, is, you know, in the absence of being able to speak to the positive, we also have the possibility of a certain amount of speaking to the negative, and that's people who maybe just want to purchase it again for personal use, you know, and who have been frustrated for whatever reason. And when you're trying to create a plan for highest and best use for properties rather than highest price, you know, I think it's just really important to articulate that vision, which I think can happen fairly quickly. Again, that's, you know, at least that's where I came out of my conversation with Planner Doyle today, is just that, you know, and what I hope that he heard from me is that, you know, from my perspective, I think there's a lot of alignment on this. I just think we have to sit down and have a conversation about it, versus, you know, I find myself often frustrated when, and it's not just this is a unique example where I'm new to a board, but where things come before the legislature without a lot of conversation, and the place where we have the conversation are in these committees, and these committee meetings, as we all know, have got, you know, are getting very, very long, and we're trying not to spend too much time on the micro details of the individual contracts of things that maybe are not as important. We're trying to take bigger policy looks at things. And this is a bigger policy issue that I really, I think we're all really committed to, particularly this committee. So again, I'm not sure what, you know, delaying this a month would harm, but I'm open to hearing, and I certainly would feel more comfortable having had a discussion in the LDC.
Right. I would also appreciate if the LDC, like in that discussion, is a real definition of what moderate income is, because I've seen moderate income defined in ways that doesn't sound like it's really moderate income. Dennis?
Thank you. Chairman Wolper, I really appreciate an opportunity. And I just want to say how important it is to have these discussions at this level and to hear the legislators move back and forth. And I want to remind everyone that we're in a housing crisis. The legislature has recognized that, and we're really trying to find solutions. And I'm almost trying to figure out is if we're trying to find a perfect solution rather than essentially a solution that we think will work, and we're going to work out the details. And I look at that and I start to say, you know, what criteria are you looking for? Or are you really looking for the fact that we're literally trying to figure out how we're going to move these projects and get them rehabilitated? The criteria is simple. I mean, low and moderate income criteria abounds everywhere in terms of what people consider low and moderate income. We've been doing housing rehabilitation work and homeownership gap financing using community development block grant funds with income levels that have been tried and true with respect to the Office of Community Renewal, HUD, and others. And the idea of trying to figure out what constitutes low and moderate income or how we're going to address that, I mean, you can go all the way from 40% or 30% of AMI to 120% of AMI. The real issue we're here is we're moving essentially county properties that the county owns into an LDC to essentially advance affordable housing. And we can have all the discussions that we want to have relative to what constitutes affordability, but we ought to at least be able to make a determination that that's something that we want to do. And my sense is that the legislature in moving these houses or surplusing these houses or giving them to the development corporation can begin that discussion as part of moving those properties over. But the bigger policy discussion here is, are we willing to make the move? One of the reasons I think that that's important is we have another auction coming up. And the planning department is in the process of identifying properties within that auction that should also be removed. So if the legislature is essentially going to say to ourselves that we're not willing to move those parcels, then I think we really need to think about how we treat these auctions and the current parcels that are here. I just want everybody, and I would agree that we don't have to do this month, that it won't hurt to wait to the next month. But I would want, and I really appreciate the chair's discussion that basically says that she believes that this is a one way to go. But it would be really nice to essentially begin to have a discussion that we don't have to have everything in perfect order in order to go to a public hearing and to begin to have this discussion about moving these parcels out. And that's the only thing I
ask. Thank you. Chair Bartels?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I just have to say, you know, with all due respect, you know, I find it very frustrating that I attended an economic development meeting very close to a year ago where this exact issue was discussed related to these exact properties, and it was requested that an RFP go out in advance of the transfer to basically prove positive that this outside funding could actually make this happen with the expectation that the transfer would follow. And here we are a year later, and there's been, you know, that hasn't happened. It's like, okay, well, let's just move the properties. Like nothing, I don't know what's happened in the year. So that's on the legislature too, you know, and I think it's a new, here we are, it's a new term. And what has to happen in addition is, you know, a sit down with the executive's office and executive leadership to discuss not just this as one means of dealing with the housing issue, but the many means, but also discuss, you know, the details, because I think the details are important. You know, I mean, Dennis, when you state, well, these are well understood, you know, parameters, to legislator Walter's point, I mean, I have heard other legislators ask in terms of the parameters, you know, what are these properties going to be sold as in terms of, and earlier today you told me 80 to 120% of AMI. I think that's the number you gave me is a well-established affordability standard. Some people hear that and say, why is that the number we're targeting? And again, this is the minutia, but this is also part of having an understanding so that we have a plan, so that when we speak to the public, we speak with one voice and we articulate what the, you know, what the vision is for the county. And again, my expectation is if, when we reach that understanding, is the possibility maybe of there being no tax sales. And I mean, that's extreme, but that's the extreme other end of this, that none of our properties go up to the highest bidder, but they all go to the best use through an organization like a land bank, or if need be, an LDC. So I'm willing to get radical on this. I just feel like there needs to be the sit down of discussion, not a years of lack of discussion on these actual properties and then a resolution. And I don't think that has to take a long time. 1 month should be more than enough.
Thank you. I just want to say that Legislator Corcoran is going to have to step off in about 1 minute. I just wanted to let people know why he's going. Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I appreciate this conversation. It seems like, you know, if we've had conversations like this over the course of a year, that we do have a little bit of a chicken of an egg problem. And I'm not sure if the executive's office want to speak to this, but to put out an RFP on properties that where we don't know for sure that the legislature will approve for them to be available through a certain mechanism could be a block on their side. So, you know, I appreciate the comment that it's, you know, on both sides. And I think what I'm looking for is a way through here. So I don't know if that's language like that we might amend this to say for the purpose of affordable housing at not more than 120 AMI. If there's some way we can put some language in here that is reassuring to the legislature that the purpose for which we intend this transfer is effectuated, then we can effectuate it. And maybe that can't be done tonight, but it seems to me like it's really a question of trying to get protections in place against misuse of the properties. And I don't think there's been any indication that anybody wants to misuse these properties. Everybody wants it to go for affordable housing. And so there, it does seem to me like we're just getting knotted up in the details of what that is. So let's maybe, if we're not going to move this forward tonight, let's really have the conversation of what would allow it to move forward. And I would be very comfortable with it just as it is, but certainly with language like for the purpose of, you know, providing affordable housing at no more than whatever Director Doyle would recommend as a reasonable upper bound figure, so that, you know, we all could look at that and go, oh yeah, if they did that, we would be happy with it.
Thank you. I don't know if we would really have the time to make an amendment right now, but Legislator Erner.
Thank you. Maybe we need to create a Department of Housing. There might be some state law that says we have to do it this way and have it LDC and so forth, but it occurs to me that if the county just directly could handle this, we might avoid some of these issues.
Thank you. So, you know, again, my feeling is that my concerns are not about minutiae. It's not about like nitpicking. I think it's a pretty reasonable ask that we have, as Legislator Nolan pointed out, have those clear parameters associated with this kind of thing. And I don't think it's on us that those parameters don't exist yet. I think those parameters could have been established up to this point, where we understood that this is exactly what the priorities are for the county, and this is exactly what we're going to use these things for, what we're not going to. And so I don't want to take responsibility for saying that something, you know, that it's as if it's last minute that we're saying it's hard to move forward on this without having those parameters. I don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't have them by now. But again, if someone would have to make a motion to postpone if they wanted to, I don't know if anyone wants to make that motion. Chair Bartels?
Well, I would like to see it postponed a month, but I don't know what the will of the committee is. I mean, if it's going to...
Well, we could always put it up to vote and see what the will of the committee is. Deputy Executive Contreras?
Yeah, sorry, I haven't had too much to say about this because this is really in Mark's world, and I'm sorry that he's not here tonight to comment, but I did want to kind of speak to what Legislator Nolan said. From my understanding, I don't think that we were aware that the RFP, you know, commitment had been made, and that's why that didn't happen before this, but I do remember Mark saying that he thought it would have kind of put the cart before the horse to put an RFP out there without knowing what the outcome would be of this discussion. So I just wanted to put that out there. But in terms of being able to get to the same place on the parameters, I think that we would be committed to doing that quickly if that's really what the holdup is.
So Chair Bartels, thank you, Legislator Corcoran. So Chair Bartels, do you want to make a motion and we'll just see where it goes?
Yeah, sure. I'll make a motion to postpone a month. And
is there a second?
Work with the executive's office on the parameters.
I'll second it.
Okay. Lopez, is that you? Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was me.
I don't always look at the right place. Okay. All in favor of postponement?
Aye.
That's 1, 2, 3, 4. All opposed?
Opposed.
3. Okay. So the postponement passes. So next we have resolution 213 approving the execution of a contract for $68,551.58 with Samadhi. Motion to discuss. Second. Lopez. So discussion. Legislator Nolan.
Thank you. I am the volunteer president of Samadhi Center, Inc., so don't have a financial conflict, but I feel that given that this is a resolution for an organization that I head, I should recuse myself. The executive director, David McNamara, is here if any of the members of the committee have questions.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody have any questions regarding this? All right. So all in favor of resolution 213?
Aye.
Opposed? And then I assume you're abstaining, Legislator Nolan.
I'm recused.
Recusing. Okay, passes. Resolution 214 approving a contract amendment for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 with Westchester County Healthcare Corporation, DBA, Westchester Medical Center. This is for forensic pathology. Motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
Lopez, second. Nolan, any discussion on this? Nolan, was your hand up?
No, I'm sorry. That was to second.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All in favor of resolution 214?
Aye.
Great. Resolution 215, approving the execution of a contract of $150,000 into the county for access. This is expanded mobile mental health. Motion to discuss. Bartel, second.
Second.
Nolan, any discussion? This does serve the entire county. Okay, all in favor of resolution number 215? Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Resolution 216, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $42,192 entered into the county for Aster services for, let's do a motion to block 216 and 217, please.
Motion to
I'll
block.
Make that motion to block.
Okay, second. So Nolan, second, Lopez, all in favor of the block?
Aye to the block.
Great. So motion to discuss 216, 217?
So moved.
Nolan, second, you should tell. So this is, I blocked it because one takes away the money and the other one adds the money. We're just moving the money from one organization to another. Any questions or comments? Okay, all in favor of the block of the 216, 217?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained? Okay. Next, we have resolution 218, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of workforce grant funds from the New York State Department of Mental Health for workforce recruitment and retention. A motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Bartels, any discussion? You should tell.
I'm curious what the role of the Office of Employment and Training, if any, is on this, since it is workforce related.
The deputy, Mike, go ahead.
Sure, thank you, Chair. Legislator, you should tell, they're not involved in this. This is a workforce grant, and the origins of it are the New York State Office of Mental Health. So it's for purposes of training, retention, and recruitment of mental health clinics of current staff. So it's not an employment and training initiative. Our Office of Employment and Training, it doesn't have any role in connection with the administration of this.
Would it be fair to say in a different way to say that it is professional development of existing employees and that therefore not relevant to the OET?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, another pool by the name of the grant itself.
I will, if I may continue,
go ahead,
Chair Walter, just to say something really quick. I have very high hopes for further integration of the Office of Employment and Training with everything that we do. And I know that I believe they do some staff development, for other regions. I could be wrong, but I believe when I was in the private sector, I took advantage of that. I guess I have a day job. I'm still in the private sector. My point being when I ran my agency. The workforce development is such a huge part of our work as a county. And I feel that, I'd be remiss not to encourage everyone on this call to look for opportunities to pull OET into things, to engage with a broader kind of mindset around workforce development, because it's such a huge, economic development without workforce development is just gentrification. So if we're not developing our workforce and we're doing all this economic development, there's going to be no one here for those jobs. I don't think that this resolution is a problem, but I do want to take a second to just point that out and to say I have been really proud of the work OET has done in the past, and I encourage us to engage them as much as we can.
Thank you. Just to clarify, this also just that the nature of these trainings does require certain specialty and licenses for this particular case.
Which is true of most of what OET does. They don't actually train people most of the time. They just help find the training providers, which I'm not saying that this is a good fit for them, but I just wanted to clarify.
Thank you. Legislator Erner?
Thank you. Just to add to Abe's point, I went to BOCES the other week, and Office of Employment Training was there. Ms. Sharon was there, and I saw her again. They were there again down in Marlboro today at the mobile DMV, had a bunch of departments out there, and it's good to see them getting around the county, all those departments, but since we were talking about OET.
Thank you. Okay. All in favor of Resolution 218?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Passes. Resolution 219, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of funds from the New York State Office of Children and Family Services to expand services under Raise the Age to 100% state funded. Motion to discuss. Bartels, second. Nolan, any discussion? All in favor of 219?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, passes. 220, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with New York State, New Paltz Central School District for preschool special ed transportation services. This is $16,000 for the transportation of a preschool youth. Motion to discuss?
I move it.
Second. Bartels, any discussion? All in favor? 220?
Aye.
Okay. Can I have a motion to block 221 through 244, which are all foster care service contracts?
So moved.
Motion.
Second. Nolan, all in favor of the block?
Aye.
Okay, all in favor of the motion to discuss?
Move.
Nolan, Utah, second. Any discussion? Besides my dog?
These are important programs. Let's get them going. Keep them going.
All right, all in favor of the resolutions?
Aye.
All right, opposed? Okay. Where are we now? Resolution 245 approves, I'm losing my capacity to talk. Approving the execution of a contract amendment for $273,508 entered into the county with Family of Woodstock. These are per diem increases for Darmstadt and Family House. Motion to discuss. Nolan, Legislator Nolan, second.
I'll second.
Legislator Uchitel, any discussion?
Could we have a brief description of what this will actually do in the organization?
Sure. Deputy Executive Contreras, do you want to do it?
Provide sure. That? Yep. So this is going to increase support for the two shelters run by Family of Woodstock. It increases their per diem rates by 15%. This was part of the budget amendment that was negotiated last year. We were sort of talking about the other half of it, I think 2 months ago with the walk-in centers. This is the other piece that impacts the shelters. So it brings some employees over the living wage threshold. And then the rest of the employees that are affected by this are also getting raises of about $2 an hour due to compression. So as a result of this, coordinators who are being paid $13 an hour would then be paid $14.50, I believe. Will then be paid $15 an hour. And then other managers will get small bumps as well.
So I had asked Deputy Executive Contreras to break it down, and I do have that breakdown detail. What I would ask specifically for the bullets, again, of the 35 people given this for that reason, if you could, I would like to have a full kind of year tally of the fiscal impact of the $15 an hour. So if you could take that, what you've done, add to it the last contract that we had to do this for, so that we can have a running understanding of each of these things, especially so that we, not because I'm opposed in any way, but we need to understand the full fiscal impact, especially because there is that consideration of raising it to $20 an hour. It just would be very helpful to know how much this really impacts the county. And so Since you broke it down, this was great. If you could just again have some kind of running sheet that includes the last one, this one, and then any other future ones so that we really can know, you know, a guesstimate was made in the budget. We don't know if it's actually this, you know, going to be the same. So it'd be useful and it's useful to know the impact. Chair Bartels, then Legislator Yushchenko.
Thank you. Yeah. So, you know, I know we've had sort of a more expanded discussion surrounding this, particularly as it relates to the resolution that proposes to increase salaries to $20 in relation to the contract agencies and the agencies that we contract with. But it was brought up, and I think we should think about it moving forward. I think it would be really helpful to as part of our contracting, to require that the salaries of employees be disclosed, not by name of employee, but by title. You know, I have to say that going back to the earliest conversations related to the increase to the $15 an hour, which was brought forward by Legislator Yushchenko last year, or it was actually brought forward by Legislator Parity, but conversations with Legislator Yushchenko in caucus related to salaries that were being paid in some of these agencies were surprising to me. And I'd rather not, I think it's on us to know what people are getting paid that in the agencies that we're contracting with. We know what we're paying county employees, but I don't know that we have at the ready the salaries of all those people in every agency contracting with the county for whatever services they might be. So I would like us to consider moving forward requiring that of any contract with the county, that a disclosure be made based on job titles of the salaries being paid both either by per hour or by whatever method that they are.
I will say that when it was requested, Family of Woodstock was perfectly fine offering the detail. I have Legislator Yushchenko first, then I'll go to UWD Executive Control.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Chair Bartels teed it up for me perfectly, that the running tally, while I think it's fine to ask Deputy Exec Contreras to, you know, to format it in whichever way, I think it's really incumbent on us to have our staff maintain a running tally. I think obviously the executive's office is in a unique position to get that information, and the procurement process that Chair Bartels describes is going to happen under the executive branch of government. But, you know, we have financial staff, and I really want us to make use of our tools to do that. And the reason why I think that's so important is because I actually, and I hope I'm not breaking any controversial news right here, but I am working right now to figure out what it would involve to really make it enshrined in, you know, something on the legislative side to request the county executive formally, or perhaps even you know, outline in a more, you know, direct way that this is something that we need going forward, because the true cost of providing these services is very, very important and a little bit unclear right now when it's done through contract agencies, which comes up time and time again. So I actually am working on submitting legislation to solve that problem. And I realize that it would affect the county executive's branch, and as I've already spoken with our staff in the office about it, I do want to talk to the county executive's team about it as well, because it does, you know, definitely, you know, would be implemented on their side, and I think that's why it's important to keep our financial staff, kind of have them really, in terms of the legislative information that we're getting, to have them really at the centerpiece of that. I think we can see with some of the other things that we're working on how we've put ourselves at a disadvantage by not organizing our efforts in a more unified way from the outset. So because there's so many people working on this issue, we've got multiple legislators submitting legislation, you know, this last term, this term, I submitted the budget amendment to that this contract is actually drawing from. You know, our staff need to be the thing that ties it all together. So that's kind of my spiel in perhaps a too public setting. For my colleagues.
Legislator Nolan?
Well, since we're going public with these, with this conversation, it occurred to me that we might perhaps also consider building into the RFP process a maybe an award of points, I guess is how we would talk about it in the RFP process, for organizations that have a favorable highest salary to lowest salary ratio. There's pretty good research nationwide and internationally that the closer the lowest salary is to the highest salary, the better the health of the workforce and actually of the communities in which those companies work. So if we are contracting with people and we can build in, and maybe that's not the right one, maybe it's some other ones, but build in a structure to choose organizations, companies that have those more favorable work practices in addition to salary, I think that can be very important. So I want to add into Legislator Uchitel's conversation as it goes forward with that kind of idea, because it's what we're starting to do in some other ways, and I think this would be a way to do it in the workforce realm.
Thank you, Chair Bartel.
Yes, thank you. Well, thank you to both of you, both my colleagues, and I don't think it's too public a setting. I think it's critical that we codify the requirement to see the salaries, but Legislator Nolan, I think that's an excellent suggestion and something that we should look to including in particularly in competitive bids for services. And so I think that the two of you should put your heads together and potentially in one piece of legislation we could tackle it. We'll see. But I think they're both excellent and critical ideas.
Deputy Executive Contreras.
Yes, there were a lot of points, so I tried to write them all down, but in terms of the layout of all the contracts that we see with the living wage amendments, I'm definitely happy to do that. I think Legislator, you should tell suggestion to have your financial staff do that as well is a good one, just because I don't know, I feel like if I'm putting down a layout of the contracts that we're seeing sort of piecemeal that are requesting these increases, I don't know if that will provide you the full picture really of what this will cost. So I do think that it requires a fuller analysis at the front end. On the new criteria to include in our contracts, I think those are good suggestions. I would really want to make sure that we talk to our purchasing department and kind of talk, you know, think through those very, very deeply and make sure that they would be equitable for all the agencies that are applying in terms of us being able to actually impose that type of criteria when we're going out to bid. I know that we do ask, for example, when we do an RFP, we do ask for a staffing plan and a budget for the particular submission. I'm not sure how far beyond the particular submission we can require agencies to provide information, but I think we can look into that. And then I just also wanted to share, I believe that there was a part of the state budget, there was a COLA passed, the cost of living increase for human service workers. I don't have the details. I believe it was 5.3%. Yes, which is very, very, very good. So I think that'll be a huge help to us and definitely relevant to this conversation.
Thank you. Commissioner, I oppose.
Thank you, Chair. Just a point of consideration around contemplating the possibility that the living wage law might be subsequently increased, which if that is the outcome that's arrived at, in connection with preparing our budgets currently for 2023, it would be incredibly helpful to arrive at that at an earlier time in the year. Some of the discussions we're having right now about the impact of the living wage law that was implemented last August and September after our budgets were completed and we had arrived at contracts with some of our service providers are why we're talking about some of these resolutions now, which is perfectly reasonable. That was the timing. But I think going ahead in terms to have RFP outcomes that reflect what the costs will be to the service providers that submit proposals, to know what they're going to have to comply with in terms of wages for their staff would be really, really important, because to move the living wage from $15 to potentially $20. If that were to be done in the fall of this year with an implementation date of January, we would find ourselves potentially in a position where we'd be amending contracts across the entire spectrum, because they'd have to be in compliance with a living wage law that we already passed the budget that didn't contemplate that. So that's just from a logistical point of view. I would offer that as part of what would be important to try to arrive at taking into consideration.
Thank you. I would say I very much agree. I think that one of the challenges is that the original resolution did not consider the fact that a lot of these programs, they are applying for grant funding, which take months to happen. So all of the burden was taken by the county completely. There, you know, the idea of if anything changes, that we are cognizant of maybe suggesting that it goes into effect 6 months later or something like that, to really allow, especially in this world. I'd also add that I think involving not just purchasing, but department heads, because they are the ones who are working with these organizations. Sometimes there's not a lot of different people, organizations in these competitive things. We're talking, we mostly are involved with the same organizations over and over again. We know who they are. It's not like it's going to be a whole brand new thing. So we're actually suggesting that the whole structure of family and these other places dramatically change. I'm not saying we don't, but I'm saying that we should just recognize it's not like there's, you know, even tens of organizations that necessarily apply to these RFPs. That said, given this particular resolution, are we okay to go for a vote? So we don't forget it. Okay, so all in favor of resolution 245?
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Abstained? Okay. Resolution 167 has been postponed in its committee in environment, energy and environment. That was the using ARPA money towards the demolition of the old jail. So we won't get too much into that. If you have questions or concerns, you have time to bring it up. For old business, I'm going to move past the Health Alliance discussion into the Housing Special Committee meeting. So we did have a very good showing of 40 plus people at the Special Housing Committee, recognizing that if we do want to move forward on actually establishing some resolutions, policies and practices from the legislature, that size group is not manageable, and that we needed to find a way to divide into smaller subgroups so that actual decisions could be made. I did put out a request to all members to provide some suggestions. I had provided a suggestion of one way we could divide into three smaller groups. Several people told me what they didn't like about it, which was fine. But then I said, then tell me how, because again, and I don't even know if it'll be 40, it might be more than 40 ultimately when we identify other stakeholders who need to come. So unfortunately, nobody came up with other suggestions out of all those 40. So what I have instead in front of you is two options of how we could divide. One is the one I originally suggested, and the second one sort of follows the parameters of what Dennis Doyle had presented to us on the three things the county could do. So option one would be that we have three committees, and they all deal with the same thing: policy, practice, incentives, disincentives. You know, that's going to happen. But one would be divided by the individual's experience, have one group that really is focused on what should we do for the emergency housing, transitional housing group. What should we do for the affordable, low-cost group of individuals, and what should we do for the, and I would say the, not the people who are in low cost or forever, but those who are at this moment in that low-cost category, and what should we do for people at this moment who are in the workforce, middle, first home buyer. So that was one division of thinking of ways that we can impact the lives of those stratifications, for lack of a better word. The other one would be that there would be a division into three subcommittees, one which focuses on incentives or disincentives for municipalities. One that focuses on what kind of resolutions would be partnerships with organizations, and one that focuses on things the county would do in terms of setting, either setting policies, or it could be related to use of vacant properties, similar to our conversation with the LDC, the LDC conversation earlier, things that are just with the county alone. That was an RFP, but you know, things that the county could just do on its own. So any brief thoughts or comments from those who are here, or if you had another suggestion, because one way or another, we can't have a committee of subcommittee of 40 people. Sue?
Just a suggestion on from my wheelhouse. I think that, you know, you had mentioned, temporarily low-income housing people who might be just entering the workforce or whatever. I would like to suggest that the seniors in Ulster County who are not going to be making more money and whose Social Security is not going to grow up or grow substantially for the rest of their lives be considered a separate group, because that group is actually growing. I mean, I think when we were doing COVID testing and we were trying to call the seniors, they did a count by registered voters over 65, and there's like 25,000 of them, and I don't know what proportion, you know, consider themselves low income, but it's probably, you know, it's worth looking at. And they're never going to change. Their incomes aren't going to change, and they need accessible, affordable housing that doesn't break their bank. So that would be my, my throw out.
Adding a four, if the individual experience classification, then you're suggesting four subgroups. Okay, that's something. Other suggestions or ideas? Totally open to anything. Legislator, you should tell them. Legislator Nolan.
I'll let Legislator Nolan go first.
Legislator Nolan.
Thank you. I tried to improve upon the framework that you had first given and really couldn't do it. I like the idea of adding seniors. And I like this second option. Maybe the second option could lump those three and be a group that's focusing more on, it seems to me that's more outreach and implementation, whereas the others is kind of more policy and problem solving. Right. So
that it would go both ways. If we lump it by groups, by stratification, then they should think about incentives, disincentives, partnerships, and things the county could do. If we go by incentive, disincentive, partnerships, and county, then you need to think about emergency transitional. So that neither choice removes the conversation about the other, for sure.
Correct.
It's just a matter of how people could wrap their heads around so that they could be as productive as possible, inclusive as possible. So I got Legislator Uchitel and Legislator Lopez. I'm sorry, did you want to add to that? No.
Well, if I could just follow up and say that I think that the county is already organized to address populations by those stratifications, including seniors. And so having that as the base makes sense to me.
Okay. Legislator Uchitel.
Yeah, I gave this some thought, and I want to explain why I came to the conclusion that option two, where it's organized around types of actions rather than types of constituents is more preferable. And that's based on the urgency of the situation. I think in option one, we'll begin by endeavoring in a noble endeavor to hear stories and to learn about communities that are affected. And I think that that's good, but we've been hearing about stories for a very, very long time. And I think the organization into option two, where we're actually talking about different action items, policy areas, I think that's going to be more effective in bringing solutions to bear right out of the gate. I think it'll also be, it'll accelerate the pace. I hope it will accelerate the pace that we can pull people that are outside of our, you know, committee and outside of government that participated in that. We can pull them into the solution kind of focus of it. I don't want, if we do go with that option, I don't want to leave those people out of it, because we have all of this institutional knowledge and we have our own vernacular for the way that we talk about solutions and the way that we talk about intergovernmental things and policy and stuff like that. We really have to work to make it inclusive and centered around those populations. But I do think that the second option, where we do it in the you know, the kind of action oriented organization, is the way to go, because I think it'll bring solutions to bear more rapidly.
Thank you. I just clarify, there'll be solutions no matter which one we pick. That's my commitment to this. But Legislator Lopez.
Yeah, Legislator Nolan actually kind of hit on some of the points that I was going to bring up. But yeah, overall, was there a housing, like a standalone housing committee that was considered, you know, before we added the housing to the health committee as well? Just out of curiosity, because it seems, you know, it's somewhat complicated to, you know, spin off a housing committee from the health committee and create all, you know, subcommittees and little groups and recruit people at the same time. Not, yeah, you know, hindsight's 2020, but I was just wondering if a housing committee was considered, you know, prior to adding it to the health committee.
Yeah, I'll let Chair Bartels answer, but I will say from my perspective, you know, there is that challenge of having a committee that didn't have, you know, a relatively robust set of resolutions that they could be talking about. And I think that will happen, but we don't have them yet. And that's one of the goals of this. And I kind of think of this as the Criminal Justice Reform Task Force that I chaired. Was it pulled out of law enforcement public safety. It resulted in 12 different resolutions for the legislature to consider. And so I feel like once we're really rolling, maybe having the land bank and various other things, we'll have enough work for a whole housing committee. But my sense was at this stage, we just didn't have enough legislative work, like resolution work yet. I think it would be a great problem to have, to need to have a committee, because we have so many housing resolutions in front of us. But
sure, no, I think that's fair. Yeah. All right, thank you.
Chair Bartels, do you wanna add to that?
Yeah, no, I think you crystallized it perfectly, and I think it'll be a great place to need a housing committee. The other consideration was just the level of commitment. There were many people, you know, it was challenging to try to figure out giving everyone two committees to serve on. Craig, as you know, in the minority, members have been asked to serve on, yourself included, more than two. So every committee that we added meant more placement for legislators. So taking into consideration first the workload and the distribution of legislative seats. But I think Legislator Walter stated it perfectly, you know, at the point that it becomes too much, we'll add another committee if need be.
So I want to get the conversation back to how we break up that group so that we can move to what the next steps are. Commissioner, do you have some suggestion?
I just have a brief suggestion, Chair. First, I just want to briefly say that it's very encouraging, and it's certainly I'm very appreciative of the effort being expended to have added housing to this committee's agenda of subject matter. I appreciate Legislator Lopez's question about whether or not it could have been arrived at to be a standalone committee. What I really want to emphasize in terms of suggestions around the proposals being considered in terms of subcommittees is that, and I feel it's incumbent upon me as part of my responsibilities as a department head for DSS, I do not think that any population more urgently needs to be supported or assisted by the implementation of some solutions than the emergency homeless population. We have individuals and families that have essentially been in emergency homeless placements at shelters and motels for what's going on 2 years now. And that is partially a result of the pandemic and the fact that we've had to extend placements. And I don't have to tell any of you that it's also a reflection of the fact that we don't have affordable housing inventory to be able to transition this population to. But I think that we hear, as we need to be hearing from many of the advocacy groups, many of the individuals and families affected by these circumstances, and that whatever we arrive at, I think needs to urgently address that population to the degree that we can. You know, and I know that solutions are not able to be arrived at overnight, but clearly the lack of affordable housing inventory is keeping this currently homeless population where they are placed. And I really appreciate emphasis on the committee structures in terms of really focusing our energy on trying to come up with solutions, you know, for that population of the people that we're currently serving. And I know a lot of positive things are happening, but, you know, clearly this proposal around creating these committees, I think that's where, you know, in terms of what Legislator Uchitel said, the urgency and prioritizing. I hope that the focus can arrive at that. And it's a large group, and it's definitely challenging to manage all of the perspectives, you know, that are coming to the table.
Thank you. Yeah. And whatever path we take, you know, we're going to set a pretty tight timeline so that we can have some resolutions in front of us. Legislator Erner. Oh, sorry. Sue, do you want to go?
Yeah, just a quick tag along from what Mike just said. If there was some sense of triage into the urgency and to the non-urgent, I think that would be a really great idea, because there are more urgent cases. I mean, I'm talking about the seniors, but a lot of that is fairly stable. It's just a need that is ongoing. But in Mike's case, and in the case of transitional housing, because we do get some of that touched on in our office, and certainly in Adult Protective Services, that I think that, you know, families with children and families with no homes should really take top priority over everything.
Right. So I'll say, once these committees are formed, I have no doubt that this will happen. I also have no doubt that there's a lot of grassroots organizations that have been thinking about this and have solutions that just need the legislature to sort of get behind and support the kinds of ideas they already have. So I feel like whichever way we divide it, we still will have a successful outcome. I can't imagine being in the partnership with organizations and not thinking about the different types, different groups of people who are impacted. You know, it goes both ways. I think it's just sort of dictating a conversation. I don't think either way is slower. I think it's a matter of, you know, one way set has people thinking about incentives, disincentives, and then at the risk that they might miss a certain subpopulation. One focuses on a certain subpopulation at the risk that they may not realize all the different ways that they can go. Either way, we got to pick one, or we won't have these subcommittees, and then we'll be doing nothing. So I'm asking that any other conversation is really specific, like, let's do this way, or I want to do this way, and not just how important this all is, because it's 7:30 and I really want to get these committees started. Legislator, are you able to comment? I know you had your hand up earlier.
Oh, thank you. what I had to say was irrelevant, but I have not had a chance to think about this. I'm not sure. I guess it doesn't seem like we have a resolution before us. Can you explain how this is going to proceed after
sure.
this?
So once we had decided, the hope was and the promise was to the 40 people at the meeting that at this meeting, we would identify how to divide so that, and then was going to request that one legislator volunteer to be like chair for the day of that subcommittee, just to make sure that the group would meet. We would let all those people who came know and sign up for which ones, and they could be on more than one. but sign up for which ones they wanted to be on. And I would ask that legislator, so say you were legislator owner one of them, that you would make sure that first meeting happened, but then, you know, you could pick someone else to chair that meeting. Not you pick, but like that group could pick someone else. We just need to get that first meeting happen among whoever signed up to do that. Then the suggestion would be that at that first meeting, you just sort of figure out a process, who's missing from the meeting, what kind of research, what kind of like efforts that you need from the legislative side, whether you need more information, more money, more data, anything from Dennis Doyle's department, and figure out what you need in order to move forward and come up with some possible ideas of some resolutions. And so I would be asking each one of you, or at least three of you or four of you, to be willing to sort of get that ball rolling on the first meeting. And then again, you know, I have no problem if it's a committee, if it's a community member who really wants to make sure that they work with me and Jay to get each of the other, that, you know, future meetings, that's fine. It does. I understand and respect the work that you all are already putting in, the committee work you have. So I, you know, I don't want to put the full on you, but anyway, does that answer your question?
Mostly, I think so. Tonight, you're hoping to come out with a scheme, either A or B, for example, that you discussed.
And or something new. But yeah, because I want to tell all those people so they could decide which subcommittee they want to be on. Dennis?
So, you know, the thing that I think, and I listened to Legislator Uchitel and a persuasive discussion relative to option two, which is the incentives partnerships. But I actually think that I think we'd be better off looking at dividing it by the type of housing, whether it be emergency, affordable, or middle income. And I think the effort under those buckets have to do with, on each of them, the incentives, the partnerships, and what the county can do alone. And that's sort of the assignment that I would give if you're working in that, whether you're working in the emergency bucket or the affordable bucket, that underneath those, that's what you come back with. What are the incentives that we should be looking at? What are the partnerships that aren't there? What can the county do alone? And the other thing I would think is that I know that you've talked about this on doing it on the basis of individual experience. I would actually like to think about sort of mixing them up so that you have experience in emergency housing. One of you should sit on the affordable housing. The idea being is that there's a lot of, I think, advantages to have that cross-fertilization of ideas across those units, and there's a better understanding of how they interact or how they don't interact. I would wholeheartedly second Commissioner Iaposi's discussion with respect to the need for emergency housing and solutions to emergency housing. It's one of the things that we do on a regular basis through the continuum of care. The idea of what we're going to do with homeless and the number of people that we have looking for shelters, and there's really no place to go. And I would also add that we have a number of agencies that are walking around with supportive housing vouchers, what they call ESHI vouchers, which really have no capital place to land. They don't have a roof over their head to put them in, but they have the ability to provide the supportive services if they can find a roof to put them in. And I think that would be the best way to go. And I hope, I just want to, you know, understand that there is a recommendation within the housing action plan to actually talk about a task force. And so as you move through this committee structure and you get back, I don't want it to just go away. I think that you have the sense of there's a community that needs to work together in a task force like environment. And your success, Eve, with respect to the mental health task force, the behavioral health task force, the success we've had with the Trails Committee and others, I think bodes well in terms of how we can transition out of this initial, let's get things moving, let's get things started, and then into a longer term commitment by the county to continue the discussion.
Thank you. So seeing no other suggestions beyond those two, which I, you know, was perfectly open to, And I, you know, I just want to be clear. I called it individual experience pretty quickly. I mean, it's really about housing type. I was just giving it a title. But yeah, so we have option A, which is by housing type, emergency transitional, affordable, low cost, middle income, workforce, and then potentially adding senior as a fourth group. Option B, by action, incentive, disincentives, partnerships with organizations, county alone. So I'm going to just ask the legislative members to just vote A or B, and whoever wins. I mean, that way we could just get going on this. Does that sound reasonable? Okay. So is that yes, or Legislator Erner, is that a statement you want to say?
I did just want to mention that in our meeting, when we only really had option A before us, some of the opposition to that we did hear was centered around the worry that when you segregate based on need or income or anything like that, a type of housing, if we're calling it that, but it comes down to wealth, I would say, and resources broadly, something like that, that the feeling that multiple people expressed was that those with the least get the shaft, and that was the reason that they didn't want to go with that one. But we don't know what those folks think about option B, obviously, by comparison.
Right. I hear you. And that's why I gave them all a chance, a lot of time, to come up with other suggestions. I'd have to say I humbly disagree. If there's actually a group that's specifically working on emergency transitional housing, then that's the group that they're going to be focusing on. And so the reality is we don't even know. Maybe no one signs up for middle-income workforce housing because no one's interested in it. And then everybody's focused on the other groups. So, but I was perfectly open to other ideas. No one offered them. It's, for me, you know, it's one thing to say you don't like something, but if you're not going to come up with another suggestion, then it's not enough to just, you know, knock something down. You have to have something else to offer. And there was plenty of weeks for that offering to be made. So I think that this is a great group. I think that the only reason why anyone will be forgotten is if anyone in the groups choose to forget, right? And so if the people are in those groups are making the right, you know, thinking about the right people, then the work will be done. So I'm going to go back to asking the legislators to either vote for option A or option B. So all in favor of option A, raise your hand. So that's two of us.
Yes.
Lopez, A.
Yes.
And then option B are two. All right, so I think we're going to go with option A. But keep in mind, to Legislator Uchitel's point, those three elements will be added into the agenda in option A with the expectation that you think that everyone thinks about those three pieces. Can I just ask, before we move off of this, I have one more thing on the agenda. Can I ask which one of you want to sort of be the initial chair, for lack of a better word, of the first meeting in, and are you in favor of four groups, one including senior? Yes, Legislator Nolan, any other comments on that? Okay. Legislator Erner?
I mean, the senior housing, we're basically talking about folks on a fixed income for the foreseeable future, of which the seniors are one category. Anyway, I'm just pointing that out. I'm not sure if we need to specify the age necessarily or not, but that's just what I'm
saying. Are you feeling that they're inclusive in the affordable low-cost housing group by default? Or, yes. Or, well, I guess they can also be addressed in middle income depending on where they are as seniors. So you're not so sure you want to have a fourth group?
I guess that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Legislator Uchitel, Legislator Lopez, thoughts on a fourth group? Or are they inclusive in the other two, or in one of the other three?
I think it's pretty inclusive. Yeah, keep it simple, you know.
Okay. Legislator Uchitel.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I agree, because I think that there is, yeah, I agree for the reasons stated that you know the senior citizens defined by their age have needs at every threshold that you know every threshold of income and it's the thresholds of income that are probably the most significant. Again, I'm not an expert though, so I'm a little bit uncomfortable making the final call, but I do see the merit of that.
It seems like we have majority. Who would like to, who knows that they want to be in the emergency transitional housing group out of you? So Legislator Nolan, and would you be willing to sort of act as the very first chair of that subcommittee just to get it started? And we'll come up with parameters of what that all means. I just need to know who can rely on. Who would want to be on the affordable low cost? You should tell an earner. One of you want to agree on being the sort of initial chair just for the first meeting?
I'm happy to defer to Legislator Erner.
Would you like to do that, Legislator Erner?
I will give that a shot, yes.
Great. And again, we'll come up with some clear parameters. Again, it's like, you know, identifying who else needs to be there, what more information do you need, and then proceeding with just encouraging the conversation. And then middle income workforce?
That's fine, yeah, I'll do that.
Lopez? Okay, and will you be that initial chair on that one?
Absolutely.
Terrific. Sure. So Jay, you and I will draft the email to the larger group. Also know that when you get that email, if there's more people you want to forward it to that you feel might be interested, we'll do it like a Google sign up so that people can say which group or groups they want to be a part of with their email address so that we know how to let them know. We'll keep using Zoom so that it makes it available to everyone across the entire county and doesn't exclude people because they have to travel for a meeting. Thank you for that good conversation. The last thing is we had a discussion about some tours and having meetings at other locations. Ellenville Hospital has offered to host a May meeting. Is that an interest of the committee to do it in Ellenville Hospital on May 4th? Any concerns with that? I know, Kathy, that's a long drive for you.
If I
my
could
shortest
just
drive
schedule to see where else I would be on May 4th.
I will say that there's an excellent bakery, and whenever I go to Ellenville, I make sure to go. And then on the way there, you stop in Kerhonkson and get pierogies. And between the bakery and the pierogies, it makes the whole trip to Ellenville fully worth your time.
Cohen's.
Yeah,
great.
Cohen's, right? All those places. Absolutely. I also like sushi in Stone Ridge on the way.
Right. But no, haven't tried the pierogies in Kerhonkson, you got to do it.
Yeah, no, they have a great reputation. And I've stopped there, but never when they were open. So maybe this is my chance.
I've never gone to Ellenville without going to Cohen's. So, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, yeah, I could do that on that date.
Okay, terrific.
What time would we be talking?
I think it's going to be the typical time, but okay. Jay will work that out with Ellenville and let you know if anything should change. Deputy Executive Contreras, you're good with that?
Yeah, sorry, just to clarify, we're talking about holding the committee meeting in Ellenville? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So we'd probably get there a little early for anyone who wants a tour, not after, because these meetings go ridiculously long. So we'll have a little brief time before for anyone who wants to get there sooner for a tour, and then we would have our meeting. Maybe we'll shoot for 5 o'clock instead of 5:30, just to make everyone's life easier. All right.
Sorry, and then the department heads will also be expected to attend?
I think we can find ways of doing Zoom for you and them if you would like to Zoom in. It also allows community members if they want to, you know. So Jay, can we just make sure we can have like a hybrid model? I'm sure they can. They have a conference room. I've seen it.
Okay. That would be helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, at least phone call in. A lot of those places have the central satellite in the middle of the table.
But, you know, if you could just do us a favor and not send us so many resolutions next month. You do what you got to do. All right. Motion to adjourn. Oh, sorry, Dennis. You got something
Just one information for the committee. The legislature and the executive put a additional position in my office in the planning department for a housing planner, senior housing planning. We have tentatively identified a candidate who has indicated that they will take the job. His name is Kai Lord Farmer. He's out of California. He has a substantial amount of experience in housing. And in addition, he also has a substantial amount of experience in climate and climate action working for the city of Sacramento. So he should be starting, I hope, mid-May.
That'd be great. And great to have him at these subcommittee meetings. Okay. So motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Nolan, second.
Second.
You should tell his dog. All in favor of adjourning?
Aye.
All right. Thank you all.